Good morning. Welcome to the special city council budget review process. It is July 14th, 9 a.m. We do have a forum, so I will call the meeting for order. Before we get into public comments or into the budget itself this morning, we're very thankful for all of the rain, but also that comes with some cautionary situations potentially for some of our neighbors and county residents. So I did ask if Ashley Morris, our emergency management coordinator, would come and give us a few words of where we're at with all of that. Thank you, Ashley.
Sure.
Did you bring your boat?
Me. All right. Good morning, mayor, council, everybody here. I'm just here to give a little bit of a weather situational update and talk a little more about what city county emergency management is doing. So as of right now, we are under a flood watch until Thursday at 7 p.m. They're anticipating totals from 1 to 5 widespread, but in the watch text, you could actually see 10 inches. So some places already south of us, like Uvalde, have already seen 10 to 12 inches. And we're really trying to keep an eye on those little downpours that we can't forecast well in terms of location. And so this flood watch is a little more escalated because we just have a very moisture rich environment, and we have what we call an MCV, or a vortex little cyclone that does not move well. MCVs here in Central Texas are concerning. That's what basically causes all of our hill country floods. That was, you know, last July was MCV. This is MCV. So we're taking a little more attention, or taking this a little more seriously in terms of a flood watch. We do have currently 6 impacted road crossings around the county. As of last night, we've got law enforcement going around checking on that. We expect the crossings to be off and on, depending on where we're getting the heaviest rain. We also didn't have any emergency calls for service or any property damage reported. We will be reaching out to residents and keeping an eye on that, just for situational awareness and other things. Moving in today, this is a multi-day event, and so another concerning thing about these heavy downpours with this MCV is that we're expecting to see multiple rounds with this. Rounds today, this morning, we have another good chance of some rounds this evening overnight, and then tomorrow, and then we start to see it taper off Thursday. So we're going to be kind of under the gun for the next couple of days with the rain. And again, we could see another 2 to 4 inches on top of the 4 that we've already gotten around the county. So it kind of depends on who's under that downpour, where it's going to build up. And it's really tough to forecast, so we have to just maintain a situational awareness and keep an eye on that. One final note on that MCV, National Weather Service is starting to really gear up their language in terms of including Eastern Hill Country. We've got to watch where that thing wobbles, because again, the center of it's over Uvalde right now. If it moves up northeast, then we're going to have more rain, and that would be the concern there. So as far as us, I mean, we continue to coordinate with the National Weather Service. We get chat updates. We're also engaged in checking the rivers, the gauges, all of that, providing that information to the public through social media releases and things like that. And we also have dispatch and law enforcement partners reporting on flooded roads, logging that, and keeping an eye on that. We will be holding a city-county coordination call at 12:30 in between meetings, so that we can all get on the same page in terms of what public safety agencies are doing what operational concerns are there any resource needs with flood response. And so that's another good step that we're going to take to be ready. And then we are more than likely going to be activating the Emergency Operations Center at a partial level 3. This is going to be a hybrid activation where I will be on site at the EOC starting this evening overnight. Public safety agencies, police, fire, and otherwise noted as on call. And then we will be able to coordinate out the Emergency Operations Center if we start to see 5 inches, 10 inches, and significant flooding around the county that turns into water rescues. So that is all I have. I am more than happy to take questions, because I've been looking at the radar for about 24 hours now.
So it sounds like you have a good action plan. Is there anything further we can do for you? Anything that you need?
Nothing for now, but I will say we really want residents to take this seriously. We sent out a pre-alert yesterday, just letting everyone know about the flood watch, reminding residents not to drive through flooded roads, ponding, all of that. And also, we really want residents to report. So if a resident is getting flooding in their home or flood damage of any sort, we really want to start collecting that information so that if there is some kind of need for a declaration or any kind of further steps with the state or the feds, we can take action on that. So if you guys could just spread the word, that would be great and highly appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Ashley. Any further comments or questions? All right, thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we are going to step into the budget review. This is getting a little bit more detailed. We've kind of compressed the budget review over the past couple of years, so Krista is going to take us through more of the detail, stepping down into more of the detail by departments and overall snapshots. I'll turn it over to you.
Okay. Clint, anything you'd like to start with?
Sure, if I could. Mayor, Council, thank you for being here today. Staff, others, thank you for being here today for this budget meeting. As Randy mentioned, we have compressed the process, the budget process over the years. We actually went from 12 budget meetings in 2022 to about 3 or 4 for Council's request. Although this is one of the last or the last budget workshop that we're scheduled to have with the Council, correct? We'll probably have at least one more or two. So where we started at about 30,000 feet, we're getting down to about 10. I can tell you as we take a look at the budget this year, the last couple of years, there are a lot of unknowns. One thing we do know is that it appears property values are going down. We don't have as much new value coming on of tax rolls. That affects a big part of our general fund budget, which funds police, fire, EMS, other departments. Sales tax is doing very well, but inflation is high. Thank you, Tim, for all the info that you continue to send over, which is our performance month after month, but we're not sure what the future holds with that respect. So as we go into the year, we're going to be talking a lot about recurring expenses being new employees. When you hire up an employee, you have that person in the budget as an increasing expense year over year, really trying to hold the line this year on hiring new employees and taking care of the employees that we have. Inflation is about 4.2%. Again, I'm looking over at Tim. Is that pretty good, latest number? And people are struggling. Just read a news article where people are starting to buy groceries with credit cards. We have a number of employees that are working second and third jobs. So from my perspective as city manager, I want to do everything that I can do working with the council to ensure that we're taking care of our greatest asset, in my opinion, which is our employees. So as we work through this budget, you're going to see a fairly flat budget that concentrates on that priority and a lot of projects and other initiatives that address a number of council's community priorities. So this is meant to be a very high level discussion, again, getting into as much detail as you'd like to get into. We're going to be here for most of the day. We have two meetings today. So, Mayor, if you'd like to take a break about every hour, I would recommend that. But with that, if you have any questions for me, be happy to answer those. Otherwise, I'll turn it back over to Chris.
Thanks, Clinton. Good morning, Mayor and Council, staff, visitors. Thanks for coming this morning. Try not to make this too painful for y'all and try to keep it interesting. And we've gone through this with some council members and staff. And so we've made several revisions. So hopefully we've got it up to par for everyone this morning. So we're going to talk about city council priorities, just do a quick review of the ones that we've talked about at our last meeting. And then budget overview, we're going to talk about general fund versus enterprise funds, where we're at year to date, what we're looking at forecasting on the budget for 2027, personnel request, look at property tax, capital requests, and then next steps just with future dates ahead. I won't read through these next two slides, but I just would like everyone to take a look at those for the different priorities that we have. Some of them are, you'll see the same priorities with different council members and the mayor. But one general theme I noticed is hot funds, you know, using hot funds, seeing if we can use hot funds that we get for our public safety, police, fire, and EMS. So we want to take a look at that. We want to make sure that we're keeping our city infrastructure strong, giving employees the tools that they need to do their jobs. And of course, water. Water is very much on everyone's minds, and thank goodness for the rain today. Re-engage with the Comanche Nation. That's one that's not out on everybody's list, but I want to make sure we mention that. Turner Hall revitalization, and then mobility, transportation, roads, trails. And then the Turner Hall and Ham property, and then Main Street initiatives. Okay, so to get into the numbers, this is our citywide, look at our citywide financials, where we are year to date, and these year to date numbers, I ran these in early July. So we have some journal entries for those of you that close the books every month. We have some journal entries that haven't been posted yet for June. So we will have some additional revenues going in, but of course our payrolls and most of our AP expenses are up to date through the 1st of July. So year to date, we're at about $58 million, and then expenses about $57 million. So I think we're on track to hit our revenues and our expenses. Where we probably will fall short is we have several capital projects that are carrying over into next year. So we will see some savings because of timing of capital projects. And also we've had turnover during the year. So we'll see some employee personnel savings as well. So right now, looking at the 2027 request, we're budgeted revenue at 1% less than 2026, 2027, and then expenses were also down 1%. We're going to be looking at those revenues over the next couple months before we would have to, you know, adopt the budget and see where we can possibly look at raising revenues. Right now, we don't have anything increasing for electric or water. Sanitation, everything is remaining flat. Sales tax, which is one of our number one revenue sources, we currently are budgeting that at $9.3 million because that would be what we're at for this year. And we don't, I don't want to go above 9.3 because we are doing very well this year. I think we're going to finish out at about 9.4, hopefully. And so I think we'll be conservative and go in with the same budget for 27 as we have for 26. At the 9.25. All right, so then just to look at general fund specifically, we have a personnel increase in there at right now at 2.5%. So that's just rolling up to 3 on here. Maintenance and operation is flat. Capital, we've had several, because of City Hall capital expenses that are not going to repeat in 27, our capital costs have gone down. Our debt is flat, so we're looking at 2% revenue reduction for general fund and a 4% expense reduction. And as far as revenues for general fund, I don't see those changing much except for property tax. Property tax is still a little bit of a mystery until we get our no new revenue rate and our voter approval rates. So those will come out. Those are scheduled to come out from the appraisal's office on July 25th. So we'll get those very soon, and then that will be the last piece of our puzzle on our revenues. But looking at valuations, what I've seen with estimates, I'm not anticipating the property tax to be a huge increase for us. Then I believe the no new revenue is going to come in about where we're at right now with the voter approval rate that we voted for last year. And if we did go with the voter approval rate, looking at the estimates, I believe, and this is my opinion with working with property tax for the few years that I have, but I believe that the voter approval rate is not going to gain us that much more revenue this year as it has in years past, mainly because of the valuations, the way the valuations are coming in this year.
Chris, on the valuations, I got a report, I think, from Graham. Graham's here somewhere. That it showed a category of properties dropping in valuations by 10% and others, single-family homes potentially increasing slightly. So to the city, it's a net zero, but to individual property owners, depending on what you own, they may see some fluctuation. Is that true?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I can tell you my people that I've talked to, I've heard a lot of property values that have gone down over the last year. And then our new construction taxable value, we were at 204 million for last year. And this year we're only at 84 million. So that's going to have quite an impact, 59% reduction, which is about 275,000 in lost revenue for us going into 27.
What about the new homes that are being built out?
That's what that new number is. So we were at 204, and now this year we're looking at 84 million. And there are more properties that are going to come on the tax roll, but it won't be for this next tax year.
What would you say the average new valuation is over the last 5 years? Around 100,000 a year? Or 100 million a year?
Oh, okay. Just looking at that, looking at the last several years, it's been, well, 23 was 113 million, and then 24 was 109, so.
And the last part is, you know, we had the Elber come on to the tax rolls at some point in the past. The Moisa or Muse, depending on who you are, is not coming out of the tax rolls until probably calendar Q3, is my understanding.
Right.
So we won't really see a significant impact of that in fiscal year 27.
Correct. So just since we're talking about property tax, a 1 cent change for us looks about 350,000. All right, moving on, general fund. So we've looked at this chart, this graphic in our last meeting, and as Clinton stated earlier, I'm really trying to focus our attention on our recurring expenditures, because we cannot use our reserves for recurring expenditures. Reserves are supposed to be for one-time capital projects. And you can use them, but it's in emergency cases only. It's almost like if you were taking all of your savings to pay for your rent, eventually your savings is going to be gone. So you wouldn't have any savings to pay for your rent. So kind of think about it like that when you're looking at recurring versus capital and using your reserves for capital only and not for your recurring. Because personnel costs are going to keep compounding year over year. And as we add employees, those recurring costs are going up. Well, if our revenue stays flat, eventually we're going to have to go into our reserves. So the green line is the recurring expenses, and then the orange is our current capital and debt that we have in the 2027 budget. That blue line is the revenue line. And we're looking right now at revenue for general fund staying flat. So that revenue line is just sweeping across the capital line item, the orange. So we're in a slight deficit right now. And hopefully when the property tax news comes out, we might see a little bit of lift from that. That'll bring us to a balanced budget. It may be the voter approval rate that does that, but that's something we'll talk about when we get there. And then going into 2028, I've currently forecasted a 2% increase in revenues and then a 3% increase in expenses. So again, we have a 2% increase in revenues in that forecast, but where's that 2% in revenue going to come from? We don't know right now, because if we're flat again next year, we're going to have to try to find that 2% to keep up with our recurring expenditures and being able to have capital projects.
Is that 3% expense increase everything that's loaded, or?
Yes.
With all the requested loads?
Okay. Yes.
Nothing that's in red that's not?
Well, and let me just go back. So for general fund right now, we're at a 2%, 4% expense reduction. So right now we're looking at a reduction in our expenses.
Okay.
So for the forecast for 28, it's a 3% increase in expenses and then a 2% increase in revenues. So looking at your revenues less your recurring expenditures, that's leaving us about 2.3 million for capital and debt. Well, we've been running a little bit higher than that. We need more than 2.3. We need more like 2.6, 2.7 is what we've been averaging. So that's why we have a deficit for this year in our budget, and then we're looking at having a deficit right now for 2027's budget. All Okay, so we talked about property tax a few minutes ago, but just a repeat of where we're at right now. At our current rate of 0.227, 427, we're generating 8.9 million. Of that 8.9 million, about 8 million of that goes into the general fund for maintenance and operations, which is the green part of the bars. And then the remaining part of the revenue goes into our debt service, our interest and sinking fund. So that's the debt rate that we have is very low, under 3 cents. And compared to other cities, I know we've talked about this in other meetings, you know, some cities are at 20, 30 cents for their debt rate. So we're very fortunate with a debt, with a property tax rate as low as we have, to only have debt of under 3 cents.
We have debt rolling off in 2032, is that right?
We do have some debt falling off. Let me just take a look real quick. I don't want to tell you the wrong thing. So our swimming pool debt that we issued back in 2012 will be falling off in 2032. So that'll be about 200,000 savings. And then the next general fund debt that we have will be falling off in 2037. And that's for the park land.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so talking about general fund revenues, most of you all know that sales tax is our largest revenue source for general fund, 9.2, that's 35% of our revenue. And then property tax is right under that at the 8 million with the other 900,000 going to debt service. So that's 31%. And then we have our intercompany transfers. That's money that comes into general fund from the enterprise utility funds for the in lieu of taxes. That's about 2.8 million. And then we have our intergovernmental transfers. That's money that we get from the county that helps us pay for our fire and our health and our EMS that goes, of course, into enterprise. And the remaining 16% of the revenue that we bring in for general fund is actual revenues that the departments themselves are bringing in. And then looking at the general fund expenditures, we're at 26.7 million approximately, and 90% of our expenses are recurring, and then the 10% is capital and debt. And of that 90% recurring, our largest, of course, expense is personnel. That's about 55%. That includes currently a 2.5% increase. We talked about looking at going higher to keep up with inflation. So we are looking at that, but right now the numbers include only a 2.5% increase. We have certification pay, and then of course our retirement, our health insurance, which will most likely be going up. We don't have an increase plugged in yet for health insurance. We're flat at this point. Overtime, you know, overtime, made a note here for general fund, 482,000, 430,000 of that is for fire and police. So that's where we go back talking about hot money and how we, you know, if we could get some supplemental income coming over from the hot money that would help pay for some of our public safety dollars.
So it's that, I assume that has to do with some of these grass fires or other things. Are we getting any funds back from the state or the federal government?
Yes, we actually, it's not a fast process.
No, I know.
But we did just recently receive, I believe it was $42,000 for the Crab Apple Fire from TDOM as a reimbursement.
Well, I'm sorry, what was the amount?
$42,000.
Pay for one person.
Yeah, it's tough to get money back from them because only certain expenses are eligible. But Ashley Morris, where are you? That was a she helped significantly when she joined on getting that money to us quickly.
And back to Clinton's comments on personnel, the 2.5% increase, we're trying to look at creative ways to make sure we're taking care of folks below a certain dollar threshold, because that 2.5% at 60 is a lot less than 2.5 at something else. So that, I think that's a priority of mine. I'd like to see that as well.
Yes.
Now, we're going to get into that conversation here in just a little bit.
Okay.
I think now would probably be a good time to talk about it. We're talking about personnel and our, we're going to be issuing a new personnel policy shortly. Did you see Tammy's here?
Sure, if I could get Tammy to come up and sit next to you so we can have a conversation. So for a number of years, we've been talking about potentially restructuring our pay increases for city employees and trying to make it a little bit more fair from your paid employee to your highest paid employee in terms of actual dollar amount that those employees get. So Tammy came to me this year and asked if that's something that we wanted to consider doing. So we visited a little bit. I asked her to put something together, which she did. And she's come up with a couple of different options that give a higher percentage increase in pay through a tiered approach, starting with your lowest paid employees. You know, your mid-range gets a little bit lower percentage, and then your top paid employees get an even lower percentage. So the dollars really are more equivalent across the board. We've talked about 2.5% just as a starting point. We would also like to discuss with the council an option that at a minimum addresses inflation. I know that Sharon Joseph is with us today. I can remember when she was on council and we had this conversation back in 2022, I believe it was. Inflation was 9%. And we were proposing 4%. She said, well, why not? If inflation's 9%, why don't you give 9%? And we ended up doing that. And, you know, I think we've held on to a lot of good employees because of that decision that we made, and we've been able to maintain our competitive wages so that we can continue to hire quality staff. But I think that's very important. I'll turn it over to Tammy to let her discuss just a little bit more. And you don't have to, you know, give the break in ranges and things like that necessarily, but just talking concept about you know, what we're proposing.
Just thinking that the lower paid employees, if they had a higher percentage, it would be more, it would equate closer to the higher paid employees. So more equality to where those people that are paying the same amount for groceries and gas recognize a higher increase in their pay, whereas the higher people would have a lower increase, but they already have the excess funds. So we looked at different scenarios, and I know I was giving direction yesterday. Look at some others. I've started that, but I haven't finished. I just think our lower paid employees are struggling. They've got to be struggling. And I'd like to keep them on board and help them out a little bit.
Tension's a big issue. If we lose somebody, the cost of bringing somebody back in, there's a far away investing, keeping them here, right?
Right. They've got the experience. We've got good employees, and I'd like to.
Do you all have questions or comments on that? Do you thoughts on it?
I think the real world out there, we have done in the industry that part, because I know it's the, we're like everybody else, we're having a hard time holding on, and of course it's important to have retention and longevity. So I certainly would support that. I can understand that, and that's important, because those people are the ones that are really struggling.
We did the same thing a couple of years ago. We did a dollar an hour or 4%, whichever is higher. So you can look at it like that too.
Yeah. Sounds like we have support. Just very high level, I think we were looking at 6.5%, 5.5%, 4.5%. So, you know, maybe a variation of that. When I said up front, you know, a lot of employees are working second jobs. Chris is sitting up here. He knows. I would just venture to guess 25 to 30% of all public works employees are working a second job. Just to make ends meet, just to give you an idea. I can't see him, whether he's shaking his head, but I know a lot of
people. He's smiling.
Yeah. I think he's on a job search website. Get off the site, Chris. We need you, buddy.
Thank you for that. So, again, it sounds like you have unanimous support.
Thank you.
Let's do something with that.
I do want to mention something, and Gary, you may have been the city manager. I know a number of years ago, they had a large adjustment for city employees. And I just remember that's when, and that's been probably 15 years or more that they did an adjustment to raise people up.
Well, if you do a salary survey and then you adjust to what the salary survey results are.
But that did take place a few years ago, so they haven't been, they've been doing something.
I think we've also done one since then.
We did one in 20, I believe it was 2014. Is that correct, Amy?
Yes, and we did another one in 2021.
There were a number of different options that were proposed in that plan. Getting, you know, to the right one quickly versus taking a lot more time. We chose something in the mid-range, you know, being conservative. And I think that served us well. The county has done the same thing since then. But again, I think we've held on to that, and I believe we're paying a wage competitive to our surrounding communities. You know, when you look at law enforcement, I think we're still competitive, but there are some counties that have the ability through state grant funding to increase their salaries beyond, I think, what is reasonable for police departments in the area to do, but it still serves well.
Thank you.
So moving on with expenses for general fund, maintenance and operations is 21%. And I just listed the significant line items that are within our maintenance and operations. Software is usually always right underneath personnel costs. So software has grown. Of course, our street department is within general fund. So we have a lot of roads and grounds material costs that have gone up. Utilities. We have a new facility now, so we have our higher utilities, higher insurance, higher janitorial, and then gasoline, fuel. We're just keeping a close eye on that number. You just don't ever really know what's going to happen with gas prices. And then legal. We have an attorney that's going to be joining us. But we did still keep some legal cost in maintenance and operations just to make sure that we're covered for any outsourcing of our legal. And then intercompany transfer, $2.5 million. That is our general fund allocation for covering our half of our EMS expenses and emergency management. Intergovernmental is our city share of the GCAD property tax collection and the appraisal district expenses. And then also for the county, we have the LEC, dispatch, and rural fire. So those are all of our recurring expenditures. And then we have our capital and our debt. And we'll get more into capital items in a later slide. So personnel requests, we had a total of 12 requests this year. Some mostly in general fund and then a couple in enterprise. So for Parks Department, we have an aquatics maintenance tech, a crew worker, a GIS administrator that'll be split amongst several funds between general fund and enterprise. A request for 4 patrol officers, and then for fire and emergency services, we had 3 firefighter EMT paramedics and then also 1 deputy emergency management coordinator. So what does all that look like with the numbers? $765,000 just for the general fund. And that also takes into consideration that those fire and emergency services personnel are covered half, 50% through the county. So when we went through our initial review, we did make the decision to go ahead and add the parks, the 2 parks employees. And I'm sure that Andrea could get up here and justify why we did that. Sure.
Morning, Mayor and Council. So I just want to talk about a little bit what's happened over the last 10 years in the Parks Department. So over the last 10 years, we've added 1.5 employees. We've added, if you remember Stephen Itz, when he retired, he was working about 80 hours a week. So we replaced him, and then we added an extra position that went to help with Market Square. And then we took a part-time position and we converted it into a full-time position. So we've added 1.5 positions that were mainly focused at Market Square. In the last 10 years, and I'm just going to read through some of the things we've added in the Parks Department. So we've added the skate park, the basketball pavilion, the batting cages, and the new playground with the poured-in-place surface out at Old Fair Park. We've added the splash pad. We've added the soccer fields, which we take care of garbage, restrooms, the parking lot, lighting, and irrigation. We've added the hand property. We added the new playground at Market Square, which we have the poured-in-place surface, and those are a lot more maintenance. We added the John William Klein Room, the new restrooms, the green space, the John William Klein Room. We added the dog park, the pavilions and water fountains and irrigation out there. Also, back in 2016, we had 0 select teams or travel teams that were playing in Fredericksburg, so we only had about 4 months of little leagues on the field. Now we have 15-plus travel teams that are playing, so we have year-round use on all of our baseball fields. The racket courts out at Lady Bird have tripled in use with the addition of the Pickleball Association. In 2016, we had 186 special event days. We have 338 now, which is an 82% increase. We had 15 parks events days. We have 64 now, which is a 372% increase. We were actually hosting 0 programs when I started. We're now hosting 15 or more, which include things like daddy-daughter dance, touch truck, those kind of things. And then we also, the Christmas lighting went from, we had just kind of one night with 5,000 people out there. Now with the new program, we have crowds out there 55 nights during that. So that's 1.5 employees. We probably could have used 3 to 5 over the last 10 years to help take care of all of that. In addition, coming up in 2027, we have some big things that are coming online. We have the Glockenspiel. We have the Racket Center, which will be taking care of the restroom, the playgrounds, and the trail. We're going to double the Adams Street restrooms at Market Square. So we're going to go from having 4 in 2 facilities to having 8 in 4 facilities. So 2 family rooms and then a men's and a women's. We're going to have phase 1 of the Nature Center, which includes new restrooms and garbage. We're going to add the musical equipment to Market Square. There's going to be a dog park splash pad that'll be coming to you that we could possibly be adding. So those are all the things coming up next year. So we could probably use another 2 employees just to take care of everything for next year. I do want to mention that we have lost the responsibilities of Fort Martin Scott, but we did lose an employee at the same time. So that's helped a little bit, but still, when you see everything we've added, and we're just doing the best we can to try to keep up. One of the things that concerns me is I have some really great supervisors, and a lot of this extra responsibility is falling on them, and I don't want them to burn out because it's really difficult to find good employees these days, so I want to keep them, as we've been discussing. So
have you replaced Wayne at the square at Market Plaza?
No. The Gardner.
So is that part of the addition that you're looking for, but since you have that position available?
Correct. That position's open. That's been here for the last 10 years, so that wouldn't be included. That's just open. We haven't been able to fill the position for almost 8 months now. We can't find somebody. It's been very hard to find new employees these days. I don't know if you have any questions on any of this.
I'll just reflect when you and I met before I ran for council years ago. It became obvious that Parks always gets the cut at the end of the budget cycle. So that's not lost on me. I see the work that you all do and the increase. You did a great job providing an overview of the level of effort required with a flat staff or maybe even just a marginal increase. So that's not lost. I just want to reflect and let you know that.
Well, I appreciate that. And one of the things council has done over the last 10 years is they've helped our equipment. We have a much better equipment now than we did 10 years ago. So that's been a big bonus. And that has helped us take care of some of these responsibilities because we have bigger, nicer mowers so the guys can mow quicker. But we still need more staff to keep up with everything. At some point, we're going to have to, you know, things aren't getting done. And that's what I worry about. We're going to have something that's not being taken care of because we just can't get to it, especially with everything new coming on.
And the 2 people you want to bring on, can you describe them?
Sure. So one of them is an aquatics maintenance tech. So over the last several years, we've been hiring a contractor that does the maintenance portion at the swimming pools, backwash. They don't do all of it, but they do quite a bit of it. They backwash, they scrub the pools, they kind of watch chemicals and everything in addition to us. So the problem with the contractors is none of these contractors really know how to handle pools of our size. So they go out there and they're really, we have them on camera, they're not doing their job. One, because maybe they just don't know how to do it. Some of them are nervous about doing it. So our staff is having to go out and do it anyways. And we're paying $50,000 for maybe 4 hours of work a week. Why not take that $50,000, put it towards our own staff person that we can train? We know they're going to know what they're doing, and we're going to get 40 hours a week out of them instead of, and just cost the city a little bit more. So that's one. The crew worker one is the other position, and it is just to help with the maintenance staff, just to help with maintaining everything we have. It'd be an entry level position.
I did send the justification from the departments to all of you. So, Bill, if you have any questions, if you've had a chance to review those, feel free to bring up any questions on those, or you can reach out at a later time. But we have only added currently the two positions in parks for general fund. All right, so you can tell I like this chart. So here it is again. So on the left is what you saw earlier. On the right is if y'all decided to add more employees, you're adding more recurring expenditures. So the variance there between the blue revenue line and that green recurring, the recurring is of course going to go up as we add employees. So I just want to make sure that we're being careful on not reaching a point to where, you know, we don't have any room. You know, right now I feel like we're not in a period of growth for revenue. So I think until we start seeing that again, I think we need to make sure we're controlling our recurring costs. So we do have money for capital projects. All right, so speaking of capital, I've listed the departments out with the equipment. Equipment that's listed in red is not in the budget. So, you know, we could consider, based on your priorities, what we might want to add that we would pull from our reserves in general fund. Police department, they have their equipment, they have their vehicles. I was very pleased to see that we made a change in our vehicles for the coming year. So we are going to have a savings of, was it $16,000 per vehicle? By going with a different model for the police department. But Chief Warhour's here if you have any questions on the police equipment.
Chief, are you going to a different model to save money or because of the use?
To save money. So built into the $385,000 are actually seven vehicles for the police department, one truck for animal control. We have four of the vehicles will be marked patrol units. They will stay Chevy Tahoes that you currently see. And then we have three unmarked built into that budget as well. We are changing from Chevy Tahoes to Chevy Traverses for the unmarked, and that's saving about $15,000 to $16,000 per vehicle for those three. So we have some savings there.
But the total number of vehicles again was seven total?
Seven for patrol and one animal control truck.
Are other departments using the Traverse?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay.
As in departments in the city or other law enforcement?
Law enforcement.
I'm sorry, excuse me, yes. Matter of fact, for myself and Lieutenant Seeley, we were down at the Chiefs Conference this last year. We noticed a lot of Chevy Tahoes and then Chevy Traverses, and so we started looking into it. Lieutenant Seeley got quotes from our dealer that we've been doing business with for years, and now we understand why a lot of agencies for their unmarked or admin vehicles are going to Chevy Traverses. They're $15,000 less each.
And I assume they have police package and all that stuff.
Yes. Okay. They had lights on them and equipment. You can upfit them pretty much just like a Chevy Tahoe for an unmarked.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
So just to repeat this, so the items in red are ones that are kind of up for discussion if we would want to add those into the budget. And then all the other ones listed are currently loaded in the budget. And I believe that Chris might want to speak on the traffic signals for Friendship Lane.
Mayor, if I could have Chief Warhour explain the City Hall remodel.
Sure.
Also the police department training, warehouse?
Yes, sir.
Just what was.
Sure.
Consistent.
Thank you. As Andrea mentioned previously, the current restrooms and substation, the police department substation will be moving to old utility billing at Old City Hall, and the current substation will be turned into additional restrooms and a meeting space. So the numbers that you see up there for the remodel and the fees and SKT were numbers that I received last year to complete the remodel for utility billing in order to turn it into a police substation. We have currently put window screening on the windows of old utility billing, and we're in the process of changing the locks. When the locks are changed out, we will move into utility billing and use it as it is. And then depending on the budget process, we'll work through a remodel if that's something that's considered. But the remodel prices or costs are listed there. They are similar to the costs estimates that we received for the old council chamber, but we were able to do that project for substantially less. I think in total they had quoted $450,000, and we were able to do it for about $300,000. I suspect that would be approximately the same with this project. I think those are totaling around $419,000, $420,000, but I believe that project can be done for much less if that's something council would like to consider. That would get, instead of just using old utility billing as is, that remodel would incorporate a Main Street 24-hour access to a lobby with potentially, or with direct communication with dispatch, an emergency phone, a regular phone line, a soft interview room for individuals to go into, file complaints, just walking in off Main Street. And recently, past several months, when I toured the Kerrville Police Department, they have a brand new building. They actually have what they call a safe room inside of their 24-hour lobby, where if somebody in need or if somebody's in fear for any reason, they actually can go lock themselves in that room until law enforcement shows up. So the remodel would include that 24-hour lobby access for any type of calls, emergency assistance, and then it would turn the rest of utility billing into usable office space for downtown patrol. So the officers see bike patrol, walking patrol, the supervisor's office, and then a patrol report room for patrol officers that are not assigned to downtown. They could be centrally located, hop in there, do the reports instead of being located on the far east side of town and then having to respond to calls on the other side of town, increasing response times. So they'll have an office in there. But what we would like to include in that remodel is a large remodel of the restrooms for the employees. We do not have a space for an employee to shower. You know, if they get dirty for whatever reason, get biological stuff on them, change clothes, or if they work out prior to coming to work instead of having to go home. A lot of our employees don't live in town, so a place for them to shower. So to remodel those bathrooms in there for employees, both male and female. The police department has added several females over the past few years, and we're going to add three more in the recent or in the coming months. So having proper facilities so our employees can shower and change and utilize. So that's pretty much an explanation of the remodel of utility billing. The police department training facility / warehouse. Several years ago, I worked up some numbers with a couple contractors on a facility that would house our specialty equipment that is currently sitting in the sun and out in the elements at the city yard. We have a communications trailer that we need to get undercover that has equipment in it that is weather sensitive, temperature sensitive. We have a UTV, an ATV, a response van, and now an armored vehicle that has armored windows that in direct constant sunlight it will turn those windows and then we can no longer see out of them. So a facility where we can get those vehicles undercover and preferably in a conditioned space so that we can keep them for many years to come. But that facility could also be utilized for training as well. We have a firearms range that we jointly use with the county. We're all local law enforcement, Gillespie County on private property, but we do not have a space to hold training like defensive tactics, handcuffing, and all those other trainings that are mandated by the state or through the Texas Police Chiefs Accreditation Program. So a facility like that. Garrett just mentioned to me recently that, you know, in several years, maybe the Boys and Girls Club will be an option, with that being a city-owned building on city property. That would be a great building for us to store those vehicle ends and also use as a training space, of course, with a few, you know, additions or a little bit of touch-up remodel. That's what we're looking for. I know Chris had put 2728 up there on my CIP. It's kind of looking, you know, 28 to 32. But again, you know, I don't know what the time frame on Boys and Girls Club is. You know, we can wait a few years to see if Boys and Girls Club is an option, but we're currently working with Chris Canese as well. He's been working with his superintendents to find us a little space out at the city yard just to get them undercover right now, which will help a lot until we can go maybe on a permanent facility.
Chief, would there be grants available for a facility like that, even if it's a remodel?
Not specific. I'm not aware of any specific grants. We've applied for the LCRA.
Lowe's grant.
We've applied for Lowe's grant and some other grants for remodel facility, and we've been denied. So there's some grants that kind of touch that area a little bit. If we're eligible, we've applied for, but we have not been successful.
Many of the grants require a match as well. So that's one of the hindrances we run up against.
If we went that the route with, as is described here, 1.5, could we do that in phases over several? Yeah, I know you have 2 years here, but just to break it up, it's a big chunk for 1 year or 2 years. Or is it more expensive if you try to break it up?
I honestly don't know the answer to that, Mayor. If a facility like that could be broken up into different phases, I would assume you could probably build the metal building and get everything undercover and then next year and maybe insulate it, temperature control it.
It sounds like it's more expensive.
I'm not
really sure. Thank you.
And Chief, the first three items, the city hall remodel, the general conditions, and the SKT, that's all part of the substation?
Yes, sir.
And then, Krista, is the old substation renovation to bathrooms in this year's budget?
Yes. All right. Chris, did you have anything to add for, do you have any questions for Chris on the traffic signals?
Well, I had one on the transportation bond of 100K. Chris, refresh my memory on that one, please.
Sure. So last year we talked about a transportation bond project, and I know Clinton's been visiting with council about those bond projects potentially. This money would essentially get us somebody on board to help develop materials that we would use as kind of marketing or reaching out, excuse me, to the public on that future bond project. So, you know, again, trying to determine whether council is serious about going out for a bond maybe in 28, this would prepare us for that bond election in 28.
And then traffic signals.
Yes, sir. So we got an estimate for adding two traffic signals onto Friendship Lane, certainly at the Creek Street intersection, and then not certain on the other location, either Adams, Milam, or Post Oak at one of those intersections. They're very similar in nature, basically three-leg intersections. So the Creek Street intersection is about 600, a little over 600, and the other intersection would be about 400,000. So total would be $1 million. We did a traffic impact study, and it does show certain times of the day those intersections failing.
we're getting close to failure. It's not only the vehicular traffic that I'm concerned about, but it's the folks that are crossing, the pedestrian traffic, that are crossing essentially mid-block without any control at all. And so we get calls on occasion, some times of the year, much more often than others, particularly around the school. And then with the Lennar development or Friendship Oaks, we do have people walking across Friendship Lane there at Creek Street. So this is provide that control signalization, not only for vehicles, but also for any pedestrian traffic crossing Friendship Lane.
Yes, sir. So we currently don't have any traffic signals. That would be something new for us, but I think there is clearly going to be a need as we continue to grow, improvements to Friendship Lane and build out along Friendship Lane. When we look at this cost, think of each mast arm, each leg of an intersection that has a traffic signal costing about $150,000 to $200,000. So, four mast arms, you know, you're looking at probably $600,000 to $800,000. As we talk more about traffic signals moving forward,
you take offline because it's not an area I'm an expert in. It just shocks me to see that price tag.
And is there maintenance and to those?
I think $50,000 is what we're looking at per year.
Total.
Just to operate and maintain the system.
We would rely on a third-party contractor at times to help, you know, reprogram or, you know, diagnose and solve any problem that came up.
I would say it's relatively simple. We had a disagreement. I worked in a city that had 100 traffic signals. They ran all of them with a four-member department. So I think it's manageable with technology. And that's my opinion. They might be right.
Okay. And then just additional capital requests for general fund for Parks Department. We have three projects loaded there, and then several that were not loaded in. I think we looked at adding more projects versus personnel, and so we put the personnel in, but these are certainly up for discussion.
We have the three items that are in there. The first one is the park gate. Currently, we have two electronic gates out there, and then the main regular gate that's manually operated. We've had a lot of really close calls with that gate because you can't see through it. So the main reason is to get rid of those other two electronic gates. We'd knock down that existing wall and then put up an electronic gate. But we wouldn't put it at that same location. We would move it up to right before the dog park, so it would also protect the entire park without somebody having to actually manually go out there and close the gate. Right now, we're using park hosts, volunteers, we've hired security. We don't have those. We have to call somebody out on overtime to do that. It'll also help protect the new nature center that's going to go in there.
Do we close that every night?
We close it every night.
Okay.
At 10 o'clock, or as close to 10 as we can. The Pioneer Pavilion renovation, that's going to be new doors. They've been sticking and causing all kinds of problems for 10 years. And then also the main cost is going to be redoing the entire all the ceiling tiles. We've been doing phasing over the last several years with Pioneer Pavilion renovations. We've done new roofs, new kitchen stuff. This is just the next phase to get that looking a little bit nicer in there. And then maybe once we do this, we might be able to increase our rates a little bit on that facility. And then the Oak Crest storage roof, we came to y'all a few years with those. We have leaks in both of those facilities. Years ago, it was raining a lot, so it was high priority, and then it stopped raining, and now it's raining again. So it's been pushed back to the top of the list that we need to fix these leaks. And then the others are some things that would be great to get. The Workman is a utility vehicle. We purchased one a few years ago with some attachments. We normally keep the sprayer tank on it. To take that off is a big chore, so this would save us time so we could actually use our utility bed for dirt work. And we have a top dresser attachment that we're really not using right now. And then the hot water pressure trailer, so we can easily get anywhere that needs to be pressure washed. Again, top dressing Oak Crest, that's something that needs to be done about every 3 or 4 years to bring in more dirt, basically clean up the fields and make them a little nicer. Tennis court resurface, we're getting complaints that it's unsafe. And I've mentioned a few times over the years that court one has that big crack in it. So that's what even when we resurface it, it almost immediately has that crack in again, and nobody will warranty the resurface on that facility. Tennis court lights replaced. We have a lot of lights that need work, and we're going to try to phase it in over the next several years. The tennis court lights are the highest priority. Those are metal poles, but they are rusting. We had a couple that had, one in particular, that had a pretty big hole in the bottom of it last year. So the parks guys, Trevor and the guys, went out and they welded, did some welding on the bottom of it. But that is certainly, once we have funding available, we want to replace those lights as soon as possible. I have done our CIP plan for the next 10 years, and if we're going to keep up with what we have now, we need to look at spending somewhere between $500,000 and $600,000 a year just to keep up. I think right now we have about 150, but if we can get the employees, that'll help this year, and then maybe we can try to get back on schedule next year.
How many light poles?
There's about eight or nine. And this would be Musco Lighting. They come in and they have a 20-year warranty. They come out and handle everything. And they would be Dark Skies compliant at that point as well.
Last year we punted on about 400,000 in lights.
Yes.
Was that, does that include the tennis court and?
We actually had another one higher priority last year. We had Old Fair Park was higher on the list. They have wooden poles as well. These though, after re-looking at them over the past year, we feel like this is a higher priority than Old Fair Park. Any questions? Thank you.
In development services, we have the UDC. Cliff is hoping that we're going to get maybe part of that invoiced in 2026. So if so, we can lower this as we get invoiced. But they haven't yet, so we'll keep it in here for right now.
So let me ask you, we from the golf course, we do get, it's a problem, my understanding.
Golf course covers their costs that have a capital improvement. That's a lot.
Do we get any money back into our general fund?
Well, we're talking about that right now.
Okay. Well, what I'm wondering, though, why don't we use some of those fees for park improvements?
Well, we can certainly talk about that. Golf course has programmed into their capital improvement plan probably the majority of their revenues over expenses. Things like replacing all of the golf course greens is a project that's coming up. $1 million cart barn. You know, they have a lot of investment back into the course, but we can certainly talk about sharing that budget. Keep in mind, we went from about a $700,000 a year golf course deficit to them being about $500,000 in the black. Now.
Right, and yeah. So I'm sitting there saying there's some requests where we use some proceeds for that.
I can certainly look at that.
All right, so that was all the slides that I have for general fund discussion. Before we move on to enterprise, are there any questions?
Can you go back to the servers?
Oh, sure.
IT has said that that's a priority because we've got some older servers that, plus there's long lead times on new servers because of
the data centers.
Data centers. Okay. And they're saying what, 1 to 2 years?
Say a timeline, Garrett.
I think it was 9 to 12 months.
Okay.
The number I've heard.
Okay.
The sooner the better, though.
Okay, so moving on to enterprise and then our other special funds that we have, we're at revenues of $36 million year to date, expenses about $37 million. This is going to incorporate all of the utility billing, and so, you know, we look at utility billing every month and try to determine if we're going to hit our budget or not. Because this is usually the hottest part of the year, and usually it's dry, and so depending on how our weather is for the next couple of months, we'll determine if we meet our revenue goals for utility billing. But we're pretty optimistic that it will happen. Same thing with savings in capital. We have $9.8 million. budgeted. Doesn't look like we'll have all of those capital projects completed this year, so we do have items rolling into next year. So right now, with Enterprise, we're looking at a 1% revenue reduction and a 1% expense increase. And again, we are looking at revenues, and we will probably be adjusting those as we move forward, but right now they're flat. So just looking at the different revenue line items within those funds, we have electric at 15.5 million, water, wastewater, 10.2, sanitation, 4 million, EMS is about 6.4 million, and we most likely are going to not be increasing that year over year. I think we've kind of seen that EMS flatten out because it looks like our disallowed continues to go up and our uncollectibles go up. So it's something that we're looking at, but right now we're looking at staying flat on EMS.
The one thing in conversation was our transfers have dropped. That was good news to hear. I don't know, Chief Bizzle's here. Yeah, so they're you are seeing them drop year over year, the transfers?
We're seeing them drop this year, or the first 6 months of this year, okay. And we're projected to have a decrease of about 4%. 20. By the end of the year. We projected it out. I think we responded to 700 and something transfers last year, and I believe that's going to drop to probably around 580, something like that. So we are seeing somewhat of a decrease in our transfers.
Thank you. That's good news and bad news. Good news is we get our equipment, it's more available to us. Bad news is we lose revenue.
Well, if you look at our reimbursement, I don't think we get a reimbursement 100% of those transfers.
So, no, but we get some from the hospital.
Yeah, we get some. Yeah.
Tourism, hot funding right now, we're looking flat. We'll exceed this year's budget because we had a delinquent account that's now been paid in full. So this year, I think we'll have we'll exceed the budget by $500,000 or $600,000, which will help going into tourism's fund.
I like that number.
Yeah, right. Nice ring to it. And then stormwater, 1 million, health insurance, that's the money that we collect out of our payroll to help pay for insurance. And then the city's portion of that going into that fund to pay for the insurance. And then debt service for our debt, our general fund, and then just the park and rec special revenue, which they usually budget enough to cover their expenditures.
Just a couple things. The golf course. The 144,818 in revenue is a transfer from our general fund for their contract incentive fee for year over year performance. And what we're looking at is covering that cost potentially with revenue they generate, just like they reinvest back into the course, covering that cost with their own revenue instead of our general fund revenue. And going back to EMS, uncollectible accounts through insurance. My total was right around 500,000.
It used to be 500,000. It's grown. I believe that the billing company that we third party with, I think they missed their turnover for collections at the very end of 25. So in 2026, we got hit pretty hard in October. Okay. So we're running maybe $700,000 or $800,000 for this year.
Okay. Letty had a thought that we might even use an alternate collection firm.
Either Linebarger or Purdue for all cities.
To go after some of that funding that is hanging out there, which is substantial.
But are they not doing their job?
Is Lori Seawall here?
Yeah, Lori.
I agree. Would you you like to talk about Emergicon's collections?
I don't know how that number grew to that level. How that got away from us as quickly and as much as it did without you know, noticing that. That's a substantial amount.
Sure.
So we, in the past, had contracted with a collection agency, not only EMS, but utilities as well. And unbeknownst to any of us, they stopped accepting our collection placements. We found out kind of like through an email, it's like, oh yeah, so we've recently gone with a new collection company, and I think that's kind of why we got hit. It was taken over from the old collection company in 25. So I think that's why Emergicon, it's a slow process getting all of those old collections to the new collection company, and I think that's where some of that hit
in this year
came from. Yes.
I think we need to do a follow-up in 90 days or something to make sure that is, they are catching up. If not, we probably ought to consider a different collection.
So did they simply, what's their communication? Were there quarterly reviews and they just stopped doing their work and we didn't know? I'm puzzled at that.
The old company that we had was Wakefield, and they were bought in acquisition by somebody else who refused to do medical bills. And that was never relayed to us. So now we have a national health care that deals specifically with hospitals and EMS collections. As far as I know, Emergicon's policy is the same as ours. After 90 days with no activity on the count, then it goes to collections.
So of that $200,000 to $300,000 difference that we just talked about, are we going to recover some of that through this new company?
I would hope so. I know that they're more aggressive than what we had in the past as far as their collection policies. They have attorneys on staff as well. Our policy has always kind of been, we don't want to be busting kneecaps, so to speak. We kind of want to be a softer collection approach is kind of what we've asked them to be.
Well, my point being is that we do a follow-up and make sure.
Yes.
In having some sort of review cycle with whoever the agency is, it's once a month, once a quarter, something. Standard procedure. Thank you.
Okay. Expenses for next year, $54 million, which 65% of that is recurring, much lower on the enterprise side on the recurring expenditures. Personnel, same thing. We've loaded in the 2.5% increase, and we do have certification pay as well in enterprise. Retirement, health insurance, overtime is a bit higher on the enterprise side. Payroll tax, part-time wages, and training costs are all loaded into personnel. And then maintenance and operations, 3% increase in maintenance and operations year over year. It's 35% of our expense cost. Of course, we have our power purchases, which is our largest item in there for our LCRA expenses. But also with this being including special funds, we have our health insurance claims, our stop loss insurance, contract professional fees that are usually aligned with projects that we have going on in public works. There's the EMS uncollectible accounts. We have that budgeted for next year. So that's where you got your $500,000 from, Clinton. So hopefully we can get back down to the $500,000, which is what we've been running year over year, except for this past year. And then software, fuel, communications, janitorial, and utilities are the top items in maintenance and operation. Then our intercompany transfer, about $3 million. That is our 9% of our utility billing revenues that gets transferred over to the general fund. And then intergovernmental transfer is our share of our electric, water, and EMS share of the county dispatch. And then we will get through the capital items here in the next couple slides. And before we get there on capital, we did have a couple personnel requests for enterprise funds, one being the GIS that we talked about earlier. This would be, this fund, this employee would be split between general fund and enterprise. And then our special events coordinator, that is the, that was submitted through Andrea. And we have added that special events coordinator into the budget. So total impact for those two would be $140,000, with right now only having the special events coordinator loaded in. Capital requests. We've got some large ones on there in red that we will most likely want to get into in today's discussion. Talk about a future water revenue bond for some of those projects. The FBG 30 reconductor project, $1.2 million, is not in the budget, but we might want to consider just putting in the design for 2027 at $60,000, and then having the construction the year, the next year.
So we've just completed our five-year system study on the electric distribution system. This is the one of the big projects that's coming out of that. We have to rebuild a reconductor, FBG 30. Just old infrastructure, a little bit undersized. So, again, like I was mentioning to Krista, Clinton, and Garrett, if we can do the design next year and then build the project in FY28, I think that'll work for us. We do have two reconductor jobs shown there for FY27. So, and those are currently in design right now. So, certainly.
Are there any state grants for something like that, that type of work?
Not that I'm aware of, no, sir. We have a lot of debt that has fallen off of the electric department this year, FY26, really helping out that fund or that department. I don't know the exact number, but it's, you know, probably, it's a very noticeable amount in electric.
That seems like a big
about 400,000.
400K is rolling off in 27.
Yes.
It sounds
26.
This sounds like a really big deal. So it seems very important.
It is. Again, if we can spread those three reconductor projects out. So if we did the reconductor of FBG 30 and FY28 and do the two reconductors shown there in black in FY27, I think we'll be set.
And I have noted there are some projects underwater that are eligible to be funded through impact fees. So it is something that, you know, considering that the new water wells are listed on priorities from council, you know, I think we would want to recommend that we would look at adding that new groundwater well phase one with the use of impact fees. It's not in the budget right now, but we would want to certainly consider it.
And just as a reminder to council, the impact fees are in the bank. I mean, that money is available there for growth projects, which certainly the new groundwater well is a growth project. Jumping down to the Buzz Lane lift station, similar, that's a growth project as we continue to see housing and other developments on the west and southwest side of town. The Buzz Lane lift station, again, we're looking at design only for next year. Would certainly help us get the design, 10 to 12 months worth of work, and then again propose construction in FY28 and possibly even do the construction under a revenue bond that's supported again by the water department revenues.
So the 100K in 27 would satisfy your requirements for the new water well, potentially from impact fees?
Well, yeah, the 100,000 that we have budgeted really is the legal framework, getting the permit with the district, kind of finishing that overall process. I expect that to finish by the end of the calendar year, but it will run into FY27 just a little bit. The actual construction of the new well, drilling a new well, and really getting the construction component started is the line item shown there in red, the $4
million. Okay. When you say, are we making the hole bigger, or are we drilling a new well?
Chris, can you come up?
Oh, sure.
Mayor,
sir.
Can I have Chris explain the process from now to delivering water?
Please. please.
With estimated cost for the entire project.
It's in the grant too.
Right, and the grant, just from today to, you know, completed project, timeline, cost.
So we have a draft agreement that we've received from the attorney. The landowner has that, they're looking at it. I expect some comments, but once we get that agreement finished, it's contingent upon submitting a permit and getting the permit approved by the Underground Water Conservation District. I would expect that to be basically through the calendar year. So over the next 6 months or so, we would be working on the paperwork side. Then we'll have to drill a new well. The current well is not in compliance with drinking water standards. So there's very specific specifications and details that have to be met by the state in order to meet the public drinking water standard. That's what we would ask a consultant to help us develop those construction documents, put those on the street, bid those publicly, and get a contractor on board. That's FY27, is getting the design plans and start that construction. That's really what the $4 million is for.
But would they cap the old well then?
The plan right now is to actually drill over the top of the existing. The casing pipe is PVC, plastic, so we think we can drill over the top of that. If we're not able to drill over the top of that, then we just move over a little bit and drill in a very similar location.
Chris, is the current 8-inch, 10-inch?
Currently, it's, I think, 8-inch. We would probably go up to 16.
Okay. So in 2027, it's...
Yeah, so that's what FY27 looks like, is really to start the well construction.
Okay.
We have applied for a grant, in fact, two grants. One of them is due at the end of this month. Evan's working on that right now. If we get those grants, then we don't have to talk about revenue bonds. We'll have the money as part of a grant that will help us with well construction and then pipeline construction, connecting it essentially to our existing system. So grants are unknown. We're still moving forward with the project, whether we get the grants or not, but that is kind of hanging out there as a possibility, a real good possibility, and we're fingers crossed we get that grant. So then we don't talk about revenue bonds for the new water supply project.
Are we talking about from the well to the existing pipeline? And are we making improvements to the existing pipeline to bring it into town?
Yes. The current plan right now is to turn an existing high-pressure line into the raw water line and build a new high-service distribution transmission main.
Similar to what we did on 290.
We built a transmission main on 290. We didn't have the conversion of a raw water, but yes,
yeah,
we would build a larger transmission main.
Okay. So we haven't done the engineering study, so just estimates, turnkey, we're min-max, price tag.
I mean, right now the grant that we've applied for is $29 million. I think that's a really high estimate, but anytime you apply for grants, and we can certainly speak to the North Llano Storm Sewer Project, they take a little bit longer. And so I think we need to be real conservative and sensitive to possible increases in material and construction costs. So I think there's definitely a big contingency right now in that $29 million number. I think personally, I think we're half of that. So timeline-wise, though, get the project completed, we're probably 3 years. I mean,
May 2029.
That's the goal. So if we get the grant, according to the consultant that's helped us with one of those grants, there is more red tape when you get grants, and there is more paperwork, and there is more environmental studies, and there's more, you have to meet the requirements. But if we get a grant, we're going to meet those requirements because it's a very sizable and big project for the community. So we'll definitely keep council updated on that. But, you know, if we don't get the grant, the revenue bond that we would request, and we would certainly work with council, I think, in FY27 to get that revenue source. We're looking at essentially the pipeline component, connecting the new well into our distribution system. And I don't have a price tag, only $10 million-ish maybe. But it makes sense to do a couple of these larger projects that are coming out of our revision to our water wastewater master plan in the form of a revenue bond.
Perfect. That's exciting.
Some big projects.
Thank you for that. And, you know, I will say this was first discussed, master planning effort we did back in 2016, and the project has really started taking shape with council direction, and we are moving forward with the construction. Trying to get this constructed as soon as reasonably possible.
Questions, comments?
Thank you, sir.
Remaining capital requests, sanitation, that fiber to scale house, that's currently in our 26 budget, and we weren't sure if it was going to be completed in time, but it is going to be completed in 26, so we're going to be removing that from the 27 budget. And the transfer station design in professional fees in the budget at $180,000. And then we also, you know, we'll need to have the discussion of a future revenue bond for the transfer station.
We applied for a grant for that project as well. We were unsuccessful in getting the grant. It's our understanding that that grant is no longer offered by the federal government. So unfortunately, we won't be able to apply for it again in the future. Again, this is a revenue bond supported by the sanitation department only. It doesn't affect the tax, the general fund.
And then we've got some projects for stormwater. And then tourism, and I know it continues on to the next slide for tourism. I have a lot of everything that I think Andrea approached us with and the police department for tourism funds we have put in the budget capital.
On the North Lando stormwater drainage improvement, just what's the scope of work there roughly?
So as Chris mentioned, that's a grant-funded project. We applied back in 2019. At that time, the project was estimated to cost $2.6 million. So we received a grant and then a zero-interest loan from the Texas Water Development Board. So with all the red tape, we're finally completing the design. Unfortunately, the project now costs around $5 million. So TxDOT has a project on North Llano. I believe they're scheduled to complete that in 2028. So what we've done is basically reached out to TxDOT saying, hey, we've got a finalized set of plans. The city's committed $2.6 million towards this project. Can we partner with y'all as part of your pavement project, similar to what we did on East Main, to have them fund the rest of it? So we're waiting to hear. They are currently reviewing it through their budget process, and we're hopeful we can get it done. But again, we basically got a shovel-ready set of plans. We just don't have any additional debt capacity to complete. So again, that's kind of the downside of these grant projects. One thing we have talked about doing, knowing we have $2.6 million ready to go, is putting the plans out to bid and getting actual hard numbers just to see. You know, I know there's some hungry contractors right now. Maybe the bids will come in lower than we expect. Wait to hear back from TxDOT, and then we'll probably move forward with the bid process.
Todd, there's your cost under tourism for the substation. So those are in there, the professional fees and the renovation, which from what I understand is going to be all completed in fiscal year 27. And then some remaining products, I'm sorry, capital request under tourism. Listed there, a large one there, the last one, wayfinding signs. I guess we have not replaced the wayfinding signs in some years. So they're estimating $500,000 on that. And then that last servers, which will be split. Sounds like we need to go ahead and get that entered into the budget. All right, so that's all I had on enterprise. Just looking ahead at next steps, as I mentioned, July 25th, we'll be able to look at what our certified valuations look like, our no new revenue and voter approval rate will be calculated. August 4th, we have a regular city council meeting where we'll be presenting the truth in taxation rates. August 14th is our deadline to get the proposed budget to the city secretary's office. And then August 18th, we have a regular city council meeting where council will take action setting the proposed tax rate for 2027. And then September 8th, we will have a public hearing on the proposed budget and the tax rate if we are looking at going above the voter approval rate on the tax part of the public hearing. And then September 15th, that is when we are set to adopt our 2027 tax rate and budget.
Any questions, comments? We've gone about an hour and a half. Do we need to take a short break before public comments?
Yep.
We take 5 minutes, please. We're back in session here, so public comments. I didn't see any sign-up sheets, where's Letty's around here somewhere, but we can just be informal if you like. We can try that, but I do want to hold 3-minute comments if we can. So is there anybody here that would like to speak on any particular subject relative to what we just discussed? Mr. Dooley.
Morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Tim Dooley, a member of your Planning and Zoning Commission. I have one question about water. As of late, there's been some talk about development along Bowes Lane and on Homig Lane, and there was a suggestion about having a drainage study done within the quadrant from 16 to 87 to give all of us a little bit of a direction about future development in that whole area. And as time goes on, I don't know. I would like to know if you have any plans for a drainage study in conjunction with the county to address that issue. Thank you.
Chris, would that fall under your wheelhouse?
Sure. I mean, we currently don't have any proposed budget to do such. I mean, this is really a county, more of a regional. A lot of that study would be done outside the county. We could certainly look into any grant funding opportunities, but we don't have anything in the city budget currently for such study that Mr. Dooley just mentioned.
Melissa Eckert, the county engineer, applied for a grant to do such a study. They've not been successful in receiving that yet, okay, to my knowledge.
Okay. So they did apply, but nothing approved.
So at one time, there was y'all were going to be meeting on this to discuss it. So there's not really any meetings going on. Is that my understanding?
So we have discussed this with the county when the Homig Lane development was being proposed, and there shortly thereafter we were discussing this with the county, a countywide drainage study concentrating on, you know, areas around the city when it first, maybe starting with the south side of town. We've continued to discuss that. I know the county has applied for a grant. If you would like, I can request the county to maybe give an update to the council on that, so we can discuss that. It's my understanding there is, again, a little bit more interest in development along Homig Lane, maybe outside the city limits. So,
or Bowes Lane, from what I understand.
Homig or Bowes Lane, right there. So,
are you here at 2 o'clock?
Yeah, I'll be here. Question, do we have any idea about the money for something like that? Even if, just depending on what the size is there a minimum and a maximum?
It costs, I mean, to do something like that?
Yes.
The guys behind you.
Yeah, depending on the scope, it could be anywhere between $200,000 and
$500,000. Okay, thank you.
Any further questions?
Sir. If I could get Chris to back up one slide to the schedule again. Just a reminder for folks here, we do have another meeting coming up, a joint meeting with the commissioners on today, this afternoon. We'll be talking about all the shared budgets, concentrating a lot on fire EMS. And also, I mentioned up front that we might need another work session with the council. Be thinking about the remainder of this schedule. Krista, do you have a recommendation for a kind of a date range where we might put another meeting in here?
I know that there are a couple of people that have vacations between now and the middle of August, so I was thinking sometime around after August 18th, maybe that next week in August.
We, of course, the what is it, July 25th. When we get the certified deal from the appraisal district, so it's kind of up in the air until you get there.
I'm fine with sometime after the 18th. I don't have my calendar in front of me. But.
Is anybody else not available that same week or the week after?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. I thought that would work.
Thank you.
Let's check Bobby's vacation.
Sorry. I'm good those 2 weeks.
He's off that one. No additional questions here? Without,
could I?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Moussaidi.
One concern over the years, I think, is there a possibility perhaps for public comment to be moved up? The reason for that I'm saying is that, and I understand you guys' position, by the time we get to September 8th, you've already made up your, pretty much your exercise with respect to budget. And whatever the public comment brings forward is really becomes a moot point, because at that time, you guys have done your work, and we hear that all the time, and you can't really make any more changes at the last minute. So I would recommend moving that September 8th further up, maybe after the proposed budget right there, so that would, if there is any genuine comment from the public, at least you have that for consideration. That's all.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Okay, so we'll look at moving that.
So we can have public comment at the meeting we have in August.
Okay.
But that timing is set by
statute.
Yeah.
We have to adopt the budget within so many days after that hearing.
So if we, whatever meeting we're planning, we can have public comment
at that one.
Sounds good. Any additional comments? Any additional business? With that, I'll close the public comments. Any additional business or commentary before we adjourn? With that, the meeting is adjourned.